Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome back. Hour two of the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, and it's the happier happy hour. And I'm happy to announce, got a fine guest, Cole Devlin, right from the top. He is John Nichols from the Nation, from the Cap Times locally. And of course, the returning champ. Welcome, John Nichols.
Comrade, it's good to be with you.
Careful who you're calling comrade, man. The righties might not understand the reference. John.
You know, our brave troops have used the term. I think it's okay.
John, about 24 hours ago, I was at our new affiliate, Richland Center, WRCE, and I was talking to Dale Schultz, an old friend of mine and a good friend of this program. And Dale called U.S. Senator Ron Johnson from Wisconsin an insurrectionist. And I don't know if that's newsworthy per se, but it was certainly noteworthy that the twice elected former Republican majority leader of the Wisconsin State Senate would level a term like that at Ron Johnson. He certainly feels like this January 6th, the handing off of the fraudulent electors, or at least the willingness to do so, John, I think Dale thinks it's a really big deal.
Well, you know, it is kind of a big deal, isn't it? Right? I mean, a coup trying to overthrow the government is, you know, somewhat consequential. I mean, I think in most countries remember such things and have some concern about them. And, you know, I think the only thing that might make it somewhat less newsworthy is the fact that Dale has always been sensible.
I'm sorry, I lost you there for a second, John.
I don't know what happened,
man. Oh, you said Dale has always been sensible. Yes, that is true. Dale Schultz, level-headed guy.
That's sort of the problem with, you know, like looking to him for a Republican coming to the light, because he was always a little closer to the light than most of his fellow Republicans.
Well, you know, literally in the third CD, in that part of the state of Wisconsin, they can hear us in Richland Center, and they can hear us in that thumb part of the third CD that sticks up by Stevens Point and Wisconsin Rapids up there as well, John. But the Republican nominee is literally an insurrectionist, whether he sees himself that way or not, John. He was on the Capitol grounds on January 6th, might have used some campaign cash to get there. And this guy has expressed very little remorse. Hell, man, he's full speed ahead. Damn the torpedoes, if you will, John.
That's true from what I've heard. You know, I don't know much about him because is he from Wisconsin?
Van Orden? He's from Wisconsin, kind of like Tim Michaels is. You know, part-time Wisconsin citizen.
Okay.
Carpetbagger, if you will.
Yeah, you know, well, that's okay. I mean, we welcome the newcomers and stuff like that. And, you know, I guess it's okay. But, you know, my general sense of this Mr. Van Orden, as somebody whose family is pretty deeply rooted in the 3rd District, I mean, my ancestors settled out there, I guess, some of them as far back as the 1820s. My mom grew up in...
Oh, no. John, where'd your mama grow up? Muscadet, did I hear?
You did hear Muscadet. Yeah. And so the end result is that, you know, I kind of know that area a little bit. And, you know, it does strike me that most of the people I've met out there, be they Democrats or Republicans, are not the sort of people that would go to Washington to storm the Capitol.
No, you would hope not, John. I would hope most Wisconsinites...
About their style.
Well, I would hope most Wisconsinites would not participate in that sort of lawless insurrection. But, you know, surely there were Wisconsinites there. Van Orden was there. And Ron Johnson was on the inside, as Dale Schultz pointed out. Whether it was seconds or minutes or whatever the case is, John, he was part of it. And when this newest bill, this Electoral Count Act, when they asked Ron Johnson's office, well, you know, is Ron down for this? Should we clean this up? Well, you know, we got to see the bill. Well, I'm pretty sure that means Ron's working towards a no, John.
Yeah, you can't really count on Ron Johnson to do the right thing on anything. The fact that he's saying he's considering it or he's open to it might suggest that it's an election year, and he's trying to be somewhat more rational than usual. But no, he won't. He won't be on the right side of that.
John,
I at least I doubt.
Yeah, he's not often on the correct side of history, even when he thought he might be. Even when the question was codifying same-sex marriage, and, you know, his congressional colleague, Tammy Baldwin, has been spearheading this effort to try and get at least 60 votes in the Senate, and it looked like Ron was a yes right up until he waffled and became a no, John.
That's exactly right. I mean, you can't count on Ron Johnson to do anything right. What you can count on is that he will do something wrong. I mean, it's a very interesting thing that if Ron Johnson is confronted with a choice, he will always take the wrong choice. And, you know, I think one thing that's worthy of note in all of this is that Ron Johnson is so kind of warped as regards moral values, practical realities, you know, how to deal in any kind of common sense way, that I don't think he even knows how bad a player he is. And it's best exemplified by that question of how much time he spent trying to overthrow the government of the United States. And he seems to believe that there's maybe a 2-second rule or a 2-minute rule that allows you to participate in a coup. And if you've got, you know, some sort of numeric cap on it, that you're cool, right? That you didn't do anything wrong. And, you know, it's interesting because I didn't spend a lot of time in law school, but I never heard the time limit theory for wrongdoing. But Ron Johnson seems to be trying to perpetuate that. We'll see where he ends up.
You know, it's interesting. John Nichols, our fine guest from The Nation, from the Cap Times here locally, the ads that Ron Johnson, U.S. Senator from Wisconsin, is targeting his Democratic opponent, the nominee for the Dems is Mandela Barnes. He's the current lieutenant governor. And, you know, he's been out there when people were discussing things like defund the police. Well, Mandela had opinions. And when Kenosha, when there was the shooting of Jacob Blake, Mandela had opinions. But to hear Ron Johnson and the, what, Republican campaign Senate campaign committee tell the story.
Yeah.
Mandela Barnes personally commits every crime that ever occurs in the state of Wisconsin or wants to see those violent criminals out there bail free, you know, harming you and your family. And I just wonder, John, it doesn't even feel like a dog whistle. It just feels like they're racially motivated attacks.
Yeah. This is Willie Horton on steroids, right? It is an ugly campaign that seeks to exploit mainstream positions taken by Mandela Barnes. And remember, when Mandela Barnes spoke about the issues, the issue of cash bail, for instance, the position he took is a position very similar to that taken by Rand Paul in the Senate, who has been very critical of cash bail, by the Republican Chief Justice of the Supreme Court in Ohio, who's led a drive against cash bail by Republicans across this country, including the Koch brothers, who have been in the forefront of supporting a whole host of criminal justice reforms, because doing things the way that we did do them was both harmful to people, harmful to you know, any kind of, you know, helping folks to get through things and to get on a better track, but also harmful to society. It didn't end up making us safer and ended up creating more problems than good. And to their credit, very conservative Republicans recognized that. And to his credit, so did Mandela Barnes. But now Ron Johnson and his associates are attacking Mandela Barnes for taking the same stand that Republicans took. And they are trying to suggest that in doing so, he is somehow dangerous. And I mean, look, it's as ugly, it's an as ugly a campaign as you will see. It is certainly comparable to the Willie Horton campaign, the Willie Horton ads of 1988, that supporters of George H.W. Bush used against Mike Dukakis. And it's very comparable to the incredibly crude ads that Michael Gabelman and his supporters used against Lewis Butler in the 2008 Supreme Court race here in Wisconsin. And what you come down to with all of this, where you end up, the default position is that this appears to be what Republicans and conservatives do when they face a black candidate or a candidate, in the case of Michael Dukakis, who wasn't black, but who had supported reasonable criminal justice reforms. It's a very, very ugly approach to politics, and it's one that I think for a brief period Republicans recognized was bad, was a very bad approach, but they clearly have not stuck to that recognition. And so no matter what happens this year, Ron Johnson will be remembered for running one of the crudest and most disgusting campaigns in American political history.
John, currently they are accusing Mandela Barnes of being more liberal than Biden, probably guilty. We got 1 minute left in this segment, John. We are going to keep you over. But because he advocates for Medicaid for all, John, I thought like 65% of Wisconsinites were for that. That makes him a liberal radical, according to Ron.
Well, I mean, that's one interesting area because, you know, one that's making the assumption, as the Republicans always do, that there's something wrong with being liberal. And there isn't. The fact is, that's what Franklin Roosevelt was. That's what Harry Truman was. That's what Lyndon Johnson and John Kennedy were at their best. You know, I mean, the fact that they're trying to suggest that that's a bad thing, especially in Wisconsin, the birthplace of the progressive movement, is an example of how, you know, they're gaming words rather than talking about anything real or anything threatening.
John Nichols, hold that thought. More Devil's Advocates on the other side. More with John Nichols.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Welcome back. A fine guest, John Nichols from The Nation, from The Cap Times, from Friend of the Devil's Advocates, I hope. John, appreciate you sticking around. You mentioned Michael Gabelman. I don't want to talk about his prior racist attack ads that he utilized to win a Wisconsin Supreme Court race. But what about the calls for revolution, blood in the streets? But, you know, you Republicans listening at the out-of-gamey Republican meeting are just a little too fat and complacent to go out there and shed some blood properly. What a strange and violent statement for this former Wisconsin Supreme Court Justice, John.
Yeah, he sounds like he's sort of trying to blend Beatles and Rolling Stones songs from the late 60s, you know, revolution and fighting in the street, fighting man and everything. And that's a lot sort of hipper and cooler than I ever thought Michael Gabelman would be. But it's not really what you're looking for from a former Supreme Court Justice, who is, by the way, you know, as a lawyer, someone who is supposed to uphold the law, right, and have some respect for it. And the weird thing about Michael Gabelman is, of course, and I know that's a bizarre statement to start by saying the weird thing about Michael Gabelman, but the particularly weird thing about Michael Gabelman is that getting an $11,000 a month check from the state of Wisconsin for a year for doing absolutely nothing of value, instead of making him, you know, kind of more complacent or, you know, more supportive of the status quo, appears to have radicalized him, right? He has come out now as somebody who seems to want to tear it all up and destroy everything. He even attacked, you know, his master, Robin Voss, bit Robin Voss's hand by endorsing Voss's opponent in the primary. And now he, you know, is saying stuff like this. And so you have to kind of struggle with where Gableman's at and kind of where he's headed politically. But as I think I've probably said to you before, you know, if he believes all this stuff, maybe he should run for the Supreme Court again and see how he does.
I would love to see that. John Nichols, our fair guest from The Nation. John, there is new reporting from CBS 58 that dropped on Monday of this week, talking about Tim Michels, the corporation, Michels Corporation, and the lawsuits, five different lawsuits that had been settled with female employees that alleged that male coworkers and bosses had pressured them to have sex. They face verbal abuse and at times physical abuse. Now, Michels is out denying it and saying, you know, what a shame Governor Evers would slander my fine corporation like this. But these are pretty substantial allegations. It first came from the press, but the Evers campaign certainly picked it up and they've already dropped a campaign ad. They are, you know, sort of blowing up these allegations against Michels Corp. John, I guess, you know, I look back at Trump. No one seemed to care that he was an alleged rapist. Republicans don't seem to care about the, you know, the sins of the candidate. But what's your thought about this newest breaking revelation on Michels?
Well, I sort of find it intriguing that Michels would say, you know, how dare you slander my reputation with the facts, right? I mean, that seems to be what Michels is particularly bothered by. It's that, you know, somebody has dug up things that apparently actually happened, you know, at his corporation. But it's odd that that's his defense because, of course, he has a better one, you know, a much stronger defense than that. And then it would be, I wasn't there. I'm a resident of Connecticut.
Well, they'll save that one for depositions, probably, John.
If things get bad enough, I think it's exactly right. How could I be responsible for any of this? I don't live here.
Now, when Tony Evers picks up this narrative, John, through a campaign ad that dropped today, it's blunt, John. He blasts Michels Corporation. He, of course, blasts the guy that's leading that corporation, his political opponent, Tim Michels. Sort of a new tone from the Evers campaign. I don't think they thought it was going to be this close. It's very, very close, John. And this is pretty negative stuff.
Well, I mean, again, is it negative or is it the facts? I mean, it's a big difference there. You know, it's like people say you're going negative on somebody when you're stating, you know, things that have been reported in the news, things that have been detailed by people who are involved. But yeah, look, it is an intense race. And one thing about Tony Evers is that he is one of the most, you know, I think generally agreed to be one of the most decent and kind people you'll ever meet. But I think he does understand that one of the longtime criticisms of Democrats when they've been in difficult races is that they don't respond as effectively or as aggressively as they should. And by all evidence, the Evers campaign is determined to be very aggressive this year and to fight hard to hold on to the governorship for Tony Evers. I don't think we should be surprised by that. And I do think that we can distinguish it from a lot of negative ads because, again, this ad is not rooted in some sort of false accusation or something that's made up or some sort of bizarre, difficult connection. This goes directly to questions about whether Tim Michels is someone who you would want to have as a boss, you know, who you'd want to have in charge of a company or a state government. So I don't think it's an illegitimate message. By the same token, again, I take your point that this is a very tough race, a very intense race, and we are still, you should understand, a better part of a month and a half away from Election Day. So So who can imagine what we'll be seeing, you know, in the first week of November?
Well, the mud's going to fly, I suspect, John Nichols. The mud will fly. Well, I'm glad to see Tony Evers standing up. John Nichols, I'm always happy and glad when you come around, man. Thank you for doing so, sir. We'll talk real soon, I suspect, John.
I would hope to, and I look forward to it.
Awesome. Come back with us. More Devil's Advocates. Phone lines open for your calls. 844-967-2789. And I mentioned Donald Trump having a terrible Tuesday. Tell you all about it.
Rush Limbaugh was right all along. Conservative Republicanism is the answer.
Oh, yeah, okay.
I wasn't talking to you.
You're listening to the radio show your mother warned you about, The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to the Big Tuesday edition, rolling through the happier happy hour. I want to thank our most recent guest, a fine one, John Nichols from The Nation, friend of ours. Thanks, John. Always appreciate when he comes round. And I've been promising you fine listeners, listening from the onset of the show, it was a really bad day for Donald Trump. I want to tell you about it. I'm quite excited because a bad day for Trump kind of feels like a good day to me. And Trump's having a really, really bad day. I want to start with a piece, a opinion piece, and then we'll talk about the questioning happening in court. Little hearing going on. Special master. You guys recall Donald Trump, the Mar-a-Lago raid. And, you know, he's been making all these different claims. Well, you know, I, the president, declassified everything. I think that was after he claimed the FBI planted all those top secret documents. He's sort of let the planting by the FBI go by the wayside. Apparently, Trump's now been down to Mar-a-Lago, witnessed the ransacking, and, you know, is accusing everyone of bad stuff. But here's the thing with Donald Trump. You know, when you tell a story to the sycophants, they all, oh, yeah, great story. But when you go to a court of law, there's sort of a higher scrutiny that goes on. So Trump had won with a friendly jurist, this Cannon, Eileen Cannon, right? And Cannon had said, well, we don't know. What do I know? I'm just a judge. So I'm going to throw out, you know, all the legal books. And I'm just going to say, you know, because this guy had a really important job and, you know, I voted for him and he appointed me, let's give him a special master. And the DOJ objected, but eventually they agreed to the Trump appointee, Trump's special master. They allowed that guy to be the special master. So Trump got his way on multiple levels. But Trump's starting to hit reality, let's just say, because now he's actually getting his day in court. And the, well, let me just read a little bit from Greg Sargent at the Washington Post. Trump's lawyers just gave away the game, exposing his Achilles heel. Of course, we're talking about the Mar-a-Lago, the classified documents, the paperwork crime, as some would describe them. Throughout the Mar-a-Lago saga, it has been a running joke. Donald Trump and his media propagandists keep insisting he has declassified the documents he hoarded, supposedly proving his innocence. Yet his lawyers kept refusing to fully embrace this view, suggesting that as a legal argument, it's rather worthless. Now Trump's trickery has run aground in a spectacularly revealing fashion. In a new filing, Trump's lawyers effectively admit they don't want to address whether he declassified documents while seeming to acknowledge he could face indictment. Right? That's what Trump's lawyer said in court today. We don't want to tell you, Judge, because we think our guy's about to get indicted. It's got to be a bad day when your lawyer's making that as a legal pleading. This episode reveals the perils of lawyering by Fox News. If you tailor arguments to a forum where damning facts are never admitted as evidence and Trump's defenses never face real scrutiny, eventually you hit a wall of legal reality. This bizarre turn came after Trump and the Justice Department submitted filings to Judge Raymond Deary, the special master conducting a review of documents that the department secured in the search of Trump's Mar-a-Lago resort in response to Trump's demand for that review. So once again, Trump asked for the review, asked for the special master, got his guy appointed, and that's where we find ourselves today. They had a little hearing, a little bit more from Sargent, though. In their filing, Trump's lawyers responded to a plan Deary suggested for this process. While that plan is not public, the Trump team's objections provide a glimpse of it, as the Post reports. Specifically, the legal team objected to what it said was Deary's request that it disclose specific information regarding declassification to the court and to the government. And that's not all Trump's legal team said. However, there's also this. Again, a quote from other reporting at the Post. Not the opinion stuff, but the, you know, the reporting stuff. Trump's lawyers wrote that they don't want Deary to force Trump, and here's the quote, to fully and specifically disclose a defense to the merits of any subsequent indictment without such a requirement being evident in the district court's order. A remarkable statement that acknowledges at least the possibility that the former president or his aides could be criminally charged. And here's what that means. Deary essentially asked Trump's lawyers to put up or shut up, and they chose door number two. The dispute is about whether seizure of documents from Mar-a-Lago, which was approved by a judge who saw probable cause, was legitimate. Trump demanded the special master to review those documents, apparently believing this would reveal that the search wasn't legitimate. But now it turns out, in an important sense, the special master is calling Trump world's bluff. Deary appears to have asked Trump's lawyers whether their legal defense of Trump actually is that he did declassify the documents, as it is violation of three statutes cited in the search warrant don't even have to involve classified documents. But Deary seems to be trying to nail down precisely what Trump's legal team is claiming here. What's the conclusion here? Anyways, let me tell you what happened in court today, because there is an update. We've got new news about what happened today. The headline here, and I'm going to go to the raw story version. Trump's first day with the special master isn't going very well. Let me read a little from this. Perhaps a little more, you know, broadcast worthy reading alouding. After a conference call fiasco, Judge Raymond Deary, Donald Trump's handpicked special master, on Tuesday clashed with the president's lawyers over their refusal to answer questions from the court. Do you remember the questions? Did Trump declassify the documents or not? Is that your legal defense? Well, that's the question the court, you know, through the judge, Deary, the special master, is asking. Thank you. I need a little rocket fuel to get ready for this one. Deary said that it isn't his role to determine whether or not the documents are classified. It belongs to the executive branch. He explained that when he looks at the case, he sees top secret marked everywhere, right? Lots of top secret documents. Deary asked how he could dispute what the executive branch has indicated. Understand, Joe Biden's executive branch has indicated on the documents themselves and said that he isn't in a position to argue against it. So he asked Trump's team what their proof was of declassification, right? That's been the legal thing. They've been floating it on Foxy News all over the place. Well, Trump declassified everything. He can do that by virtue of the presidency. Okay, where's the proof? Where are the receipts of the declassification? Well, Trump's lawyer revealed Monday that they didn't want to answer the judge's questions. That's what the prior article from Greg Sargent was about. They didn't want to answer the judge's questions. So they made a legal filing saying our client could get indicted and we don't want to give you too much information. I read again from the Raw story. Trump's lawyers revealed Monday night that they didn't want to answer the judge's questions about classified information because they anticipate that the former president will be criminally indicted by the Justice Department. Did you hear all that? That's what Trump's lawyers said, effectively in their filing. They have not indicated why they think an indictment is certain. Well, they probably know their client's guilty, but let me read on. The Trump lawyers also claimed that they needed access to the top secret documents so they could prepare a proper defense. Like Trump needs to defend himself and this is all trial preparation? Like all these boxes, this is how he gets ready. He's preparing for trial. Deary didn't agree. That's the judge. Said, nah, I don't agree. And ultimately moved on to question public claims that Trump declassified all the documents in question. Trump's lawyers have been unwilling to say that publicly, however, so Deary pressed the issue. So in court today, in this hearing, the judge, the special master, the Trump handpicked special master, starts hammering Trump's attorneys and saying, how am I going to verify the classification? Give me the receipts. Prove to me it's declassified. We're not in a position, nor should we be in a position at this juncture to fully disclose a substantive defense, said Trump lawyer Jim Trusty. We should not be in a position to have to disclose declarations, witness statements. So in other words, we don't want to tell you because, you know, we might be guilty of something. The special master, Judge Deary, said, my view is you can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't have both. You can't have it both ways. This is a civil action seeking extraordinary relief, former federal prosecutor Renato Mariotta said. As Judge Deary noted, Trump has the burden of proof. So it's on Trump's team to prove that he either declassified the documents, you know, that he didn't break these laws. And it's almost like the judge is holding him to a standard of law and order. I'll be damned. Asking the court to find that classified documents have been declassified without presenting any evidence of declassification, according to Judge Deary, is a non-starter. He's not accepting that malarkey, let's just say. Trump's team, he's not going to take your word for it, man. It's a judiciary, evidentiary sort of action. Provide the receipts or shut up.
It's what they do. They say it on Fox. They won't say it in court because they know damn well there's penalties. You know, there's trouble on the other side.
Well, I can't wait till Tucker, rhymes with Tucker, tries to explain this finding away from the special master. It's not going to go well for Trump on this. A trustee explained he wanted the special master to push the Department of Justice to give them access to the documents for their trial preparation. Now, the DOJ in their filings have said effectively what? We want the evidence. We want to continue the criminal investigation of these documents. The fact that he had them, they were classified on multiple levels, and his lawyers claim they didn't have any documents. Gave them all back a long time ago. Except we did. And the FBI, when they came to Mar-a-Lago and ransacked the place, well, guess what? They found lots of classified documents. Lots of, what do they call that? Oh, yeah, evidence. Which the Trump team apparently lacks for before the special master today. So anyways, back to the coverage. Deary was concerned that were he to hand over classified documents, they could make their way into the wrong hands. It's almost like his special master doesn't trust Trump. If you need to know, you will know, Deary said on two occasions, according to law professor Jennifer Taub, who was in the court. Attention here seems to be to Donald's lawyer saying that they can't figure out whether something is classified or whether a Presidential Records Act designation would override the classification markings unless they see it first. That was Taub. That was another lawyer's assessment. What was made clear in court is that Trump's own lawyers have no idea what the former president actually had. It's unknown if Trump simply hasn't told them or if Trump doesn't know. You know what I mean? Doesn't know what he had in the boxes. What business is it of the court? I quote again from the judge. As far as I'm concerned, that's the end of it. Deary explained, assuming that Trump's side doesn't have any evidence of declassification. So the judge has already arrived at his conclusion. You got no proof. You got nothing. Deary seemed insulted by the Trump lawyer's claims at one point that he was going beyond the scope of Judge Eileen Cannon's orders. The trial lasted about 35 minutes in total. And it didn't go well for Donald Trump. Come back. This show's almost over. Like 12 minutes left, something like that. Time for your phone calls at 844-967-2789.
But I ask you a very simple question, and you can't give me a straight answer.
I'm straightly not answering your question.
I'm holding you in contempt of court.
Warning, listening to the Devil's Advocates may expose you to opposing views.
It's not hard to reach back. Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, last segment for today. 844-967-2789. Your calls welcome here. A little bit more on the coverage of the courtroom special master, Raymond J. Deary. A little bit of coverage from the Daily Beast. Now, where we left off with Deary, he said, as far as he's concerned, that's the end of it. The question of whether or not the Trump team can prove that Donald Trump declassified the documents. So they were asked in open courtroom today, prove it, prove it. Where's your evidence? We don't want to prove it. That's what their court filings effectively said, because, you know, this guy could get indicted and we don't want to give away his legal defenses. And Deary, who said he would basically fine for the Department of Justice in this matter, said, well, as far as I'm concerned, that's the end of it. So I guess he's probably fining for the DOJ, at least on that issue. Deary, now if you're unaware, I was not really aware of who this guy was before he ended up on this short list to be special master. Deary is a semi-retired federal judge in Brooklyn who's playing the role of temporary referee, and he wants to speed up the process and get the federal agents back on track. And while Trump has been alleging on social media, now, Truthy Social, that he already declassified the records, he swiped from the White House. Deary is demanding that Trump put up or shut up. The senior judge is asking that Trump's team assert in sworn affidavits where lies could mean jail time whether or not Trump actually declassified them. Deary said he wasn't going to hurry, but noted that time is of the essence. Deary also cautioned Trump's lawyers from being coy simply to avoid making mistakes and oversharing potentially damning information. This is not a criminal case. The plaintiff has the burden of establishing the right to relief. Understand, it's Trump's team that sued the DOJ, won their docs back, won the special master. The burden of proof is theirs, meaning Trump's. When Trump's lawyers, James Trustee, we talked about him, argued his team shouldn't be in a position where we have to disclose declassification defenses, Deary wasn't having any of it. You can't have your cake and eat it too, Deary shot back. Deary is tasked with reviewing the seized documents and analyzing which ones can be kept from being used by the Department of Justice to build its case against the former president for putting the nation at risk by keeping more than 100 classified documents at, you know, the Palm Beach Mar-a-Lago Summer Club. I guess it's the Winter Club because he doesn't summer there. The FBI's investigation, a delicate undertaking that could result in criminal charges against a former president for the first time in American history, has grinded to a halt following a bizarre intervention by a federal judge Trump appointed himself. And when Trump sued the United States government he once led, U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon, we've talked about her quite a bit of late, in Florida earlier this month, answered his pleas, his Hail Mary, and in an opinion that was widely criticized for its intellectual gymnastics, gave Trump exactly what he wanted. What's that? A little bit of time, a little reprieve? Trump, waiving his expired credentials, demanded the return of documents he claimed were protected by the president's executive privilege. or by the traditional attorney-client privilege that keeps legal correspondence private. To get that, his attorneys asked for special treatment and the appointment of the arbiter. You know, the special master talked about this. Trump's legal team put forward two candidates. Paul Huck Jr., a Florida attorney with a clear conflict of interest because he's married to a conservative federal appellate judge who could oversee the appeal in the case. And Deary, a well-respected federal judge who once approved FBI surveillance of Trump associate Carter Page. Now, the Justice Department accepted Deary. I wonder why Trump picked him. The senior judge in Brooklyn, who once appointed as a top federal prosecutor in Brooklyn by former President Ronald Reagan, is going to begin sifting through a gargantuan mountain of evidence. The Justice Department says it has 11,000 documents in question. Trump had 11,000 documents back at Mar-a-Lago. And Cannon, don't forget that's the Trump appointee, order dictates that Deary must distinguish between Trump's personal items, official presidential records that could be subject to executive privilege, even though he's out of office. That doesn't make any sense, does it, folks? And classified documents. Deary is also to verify that the FBI's detailed property inventory of things it seized at Mar-a-Lago is actually accurate. He'll be hearing from both sides, making an independent assessment, then sending his recommendations in a report to Cannon down in Fort Pierce, Florida. And Deary has been given wide discretion. He can seek answers from the government agency that started all of this, the National Archives and Records Administration, and historians there who have been tasked with building an accurate record of each presidency were alarmed last year when they discovered the Trump administration simply refused to turn over materials on the way out. What followed were months of negotiation, an awkward visit to Mar-a-Lago to pick up boxes that never should have been there, and eventually a referral to the FBI when Trump's attorneys stopped answering questions. And the DOJ started investigating, formed a grand jury in the nation's capital, and sent subpoenas seeking return of classified records. Even the counterintelligence chief got involved, heading south in May to see for himself what he and visiting FBI agents saw, heightened their concern, leading to the FBI's raid in August. And Deary's review is meant to be limited to that FBI search, although anything that he determines could have lasting implications on the investigation and could corner Trump into admitting a crime. On Monday evening, that was last night, easy for me to say, Trump's attorney James Trusty wrote to Deary warnings that his request for additional details have already gone well beyond Cannon's order and could force Team Trump to fully and specifically disclose a defense to the merits of any subsequent indictment. Right? The president is at risk of indictment currently, the former president, of course. Deary also shows that he wants to speed things up, although Cannon ordered Deary to finish his review by November 30th. Court filings reveal that Deary actually wants all records labeled and ready to review by October 7th. That would mean that we, the American people, and potentially could see damning conclusions before Election Day this year, making this sting even more. Trump has been ordered to pay for Deary's salary. In the meantime, he wanted to share the expense with the DOJ. Maybe one Mexico to pay for it. No, Trump's got to pay for it. So while this guy works, and Trump's seeking delays, more so because he wants to stiff the guy, I suspect, but you know how it goes. Tomorrow, hoping to bring a new radio station online, the Civic Media Empire, it's growing. Ambry, WXCE, Lake Air, 1260 AM. Try us sometime after like 2 o'clock Central Time. Hopefully we'll be on the air. I will not be on the airwaves tomorrow, but I return on Thursday. I hope you, you know, listen in the meantime. We'll keep it light, have some fun, and make great radio. Thank you all for listening. Native Roots Radio is next, then Educated Busted Pencils. Stick around.
We have all the records. We have every record, but we...
Oh, he got all of that one.